Okay, so good afternoon. Excuse me, I'm a bit tight. I've got someone coming to see me soon. I had to change my diary, so I'll try and keep it brief on my opening remarks. I've got to be ready to be out of here in half an hour. So this week's going to be another busy week for the government. Earlier today, Health Minister Tony Ryan released the latest quarterly health target results, which showed that New Zealanders are getting checks for diabetes and heart disease, more help to quit smoking and getting more operations faster. It also showed that 94% of patients were admitted, discharged or transferred from emergency departments within the six-hour target this quarter, the best result to date. So that's good improvements for the health system. Tomorrow, as you're aware, I'm making an announcement about what the government intends doing for children that come to school hungry. The government is clear that the primary responsibility for feeding children rests with their parents. But the fact remains that there are children turning up to the classroom hungry and not in great shape to learn. We invest millions in making our education system world-class, and every child deserves a world-class education. But the reality is that they're not going to make the most of that if they come to school hungry and cold, and that's not the child's fault. As I've said earlier today, we'll be working with partners on this program as we see this initiative being driven by schools, communities and businesses, not just the government. We're providing food to schools goes some way to helping them learn. It's not the answer to the underlying problem, which of course is poverty. The two biggest factors in helping people rise out of poverty are, of course, paid work and education. And that's why we have such a strong focus on reforming the welfare system and supporting more people off welfare and into work. This week, Justice Minister Judith Collins intends to introduce two new bills to protect children and victims from harmful criminal activity. This is part of the National-led government's tough stance on crime, which has helped us get crime rate down to its lowest level in more than 30 years. The first bill, the Objectionable Publications and Indecency Legislation Bill, increases the maximum penalties for child sexual abuse online and other objectionable publication offences. The new bill reflects the government's commitment to increase the penalties for producing, trading or possessing material showing child sexual abuse online. The bill also includes other measures to provide greater protection for children from child sexual exploitation and related offending. The second bill, the Victims' Orders Against Violent Offenders Bill, will create a new order to protect victims of serious violent and sexual offences. The bill will help ensure that all victims can be protected from unwanted contact with their attackers. On Wednesday, Education Minister Hekia Parata will be announcing the next steps for 19 Greater Christchurch schools. These are the schools which have had interim decisions to close or merge announced in February. The government's proposal initially announced last year affected 38 Greater Christchurch schools, but we announced in February that 12 of those schools would remain open. Two schools have already closed, that means that there are 24 schools waiting final decisions. This is out of the total of 215 schools in the Greater Christchurch area. The government is reviewing the education sector in Greater Christchurch because the face and makeup of the city has and will continue to change dramatically due to the earthquakes, as you're aware, and the education system must respond to those changes. We remain absolutely committed to the rebuild of Christchurch. That's why we're investing over $1 billion in restoring and renewing the education sector in Canterbury over the next 10 years. This week, two new National MPs will be sworn in. Paul Foster Bell will be sworn in tomorrow, and Claudette Hawati is expected to be sworn in on Wednesday. Paul Foster Bell is a career diplomat who has resigned from an overseas posting at the New Zealand Embassy in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, to take up his new role as National MP. He has a business diploma from the University of Otago and also studied history at Oxford. Claudette Hawati is a former teacher and experienced broadcaster, having worked in both radio and as television producer, mainly in Māori and Pacifica media. I look forward to having them both as part of the National Party caucus, and I'll be welcoming them to the team. So finally, in terms of House activity this week, the government will look to continue the budget debate and to progress the Education Amendment Bill. So in terms of my own activities this week, I'll be in Wellington tomorrow and Wednesday for caucus and question time, of course, as per normal. On Thursday, I'll be in Timaru, and on Friday, I'll be in Auckland in the Mangakeke and Mangere electorates. Also, just for your diaries, there's no post-cabinet press conference. Obviously, on Monday, it's a public holiday. That means cabinet will be held on Tuesday, along with the caucus and before question time. Question.
Prime Minister, the expert advisory group on the policy called for a state-run food and schools program. Why have you chosen not to do that? What's the reason?
Well, I don't think that the state on its own is the best way of rolling out a program that will support hungry children. I think it's far better to engage communities. I think it's better to engage businesses. We all have a responsible role we can play, and with greater buy-in from those entities, I think we'll get a better long-term result. I think the risk is that the government plays its part, it builds that dependency on its own, and then if there are real issues around the delivery of that program, it won't be well done. So communities do already play an important role, and I think that they can, and I think secondly it just reduces the cost from the Crown's point of view.
Is there any concern that if you leave it up to sort of the individual firms and private charities, etc., that some children might fall through the gaps?
I don't think so. When you see the program tomorrow, you'll see it's comprehensive. The partners are serious, established partners, and they have good distribution capability.
How do you balance that relationship between what the state contributes and what
Well, you'll see that tomorrow, but I mean, I think in the successful programs that we've run so far, there's already been a mixture of state, company, and community involvement, and this is just an extension of that.
The General Poverty Report has a number of other recommendations as well. Are you picking up any of those? And if not, then are you going to respond to that report?
We are going to respond to the report, and you'll need to sort of see if there are other things that we're looking at doing in future course.
As part of the Tuesday announcement?
You'll see a little bit of extra stuff there.
Quite a bit of our shares have taken a bit of a hammer today. They're basically off 5% now since the listing. Disappointed by that?
Look, I can't really comment on the price. I mean, the problem I've got is the same problem I had prior to, which is I'm just not a registered advisor. So in the end, you know, it's for people to take their own advice. But, you know, the government run a long-term program, and let's see how these things go.
Does it cause problems? Will it dampen appetite, do you think, though, for the next flow of the region? Is that the risk?
Well, that's some way into the future, isn't it? So just wait and see.
Be a concern, though?
Not at this point, no.
The share price decline means that those folks who bought shares in the retail offer lost, their shares are worth $50 million less than what they bought for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a $3.5 billion company, though. The perspective of thought.
If market conditions, though, we continue to be ropey or whatever, you've still reserved the right not to go over the region. I mean, that's an outcome.
Yeah, we always have that capacity, and the vendor, right up to the day that issue shares, has the right to pull back. But yeah, let's wait and see when we're comfortable where things are at.
Just on Sujeev Rikana's comments on the RMA, are his criticisms warranted?
I haven't seen all of them, I've seen the top level of media reporting, but no, I don't think so. I mean, the simple facts of life are is that the RMA is not working well in its current form. It's cumbersome, it's uncertain, and it's litigious. It's slowing down development, and I don't think that in its current form is serving New Zealand as well. And we've gone through quite a substantial process looking at the reforms. We've had a technical advisory group, and I think the Minister's been cautious about what she's been promoting, but in the end, I think change is necessary.
Youth suicide rates. You pledged at the last election to try and reduce youth suicide. How
would
you rate progress?
Well, I think it's been really important to say that we've always argued that is a symptom of mental health issues, and that we would do our best to try and funnel resources in that area because that's a symptom of those issues. I haven't got the latest stats on me. Peter Dunn, I know, has that, and I know he's released his 30-point plan. But I guess what I would say is I think that the number of youngsters who take their own lives is far too high. I mean, any number above zero is too high, but it's too high. It's an issue that we've predominantly seen affecting boys. I think of about 100 youngsters that committed suicide last year, 80% of them were boys, and there's a lot of Māori and Pacific youth. So it's critically important that we pour more resources in that area. The government already spends quite a lot, but what we agreed as part of the Youth Mental Health Program was to allocate another $64 million, and that's really trying to plug some of the gaps. I wouldn't say we absolutely have perfect knowledge on what will work and what won't, but some of the initiatives that we're rolling out, like an online capability and better access to information, more nurses and social workers in schools, all of these things are important aspects that we can promote. So look, at the end of the day, the only other point I really would make is that while our numbers are high compared to a lot of other countries, we do need to acknowledge there's underreporting in some countries. So there's just more work that needs to be done.
Teen suicides have increased though, is that not symptomatic, perhaps not having done enough?
No, I don't think you can actually draw that conclusion. There's been some very tragic examples of copycat suicides. There's been quite big groupings in certain areas, and there are a lot of different complicating factors in this area. So all I can say is that, you know, we care passionately about wanting to make sure that we protect youngsters. We know they're vulnerable, and we know that one in five of all young New Zealanders at some form experience a mental health issue, from mild depression right through to suicidal tendencies.
Just going back to what you were going to announce tomorrow, Prime Minister, so you mentioned it's not just kids coming to school hungry but cold as well. So are we going to see something there in terms of preventing kids from coming to school cold?
Well, you wait and see. I mean, the government overall is looking to respond to the issue in a number of areas of vulnerable children that are in forms of deprivation. And we're doing a lot of things, from adding extra rooms on state houses to insulation of low-income homes. The Food and Schools program is part of that. There's a lot of different factors. There's a thing I've described on a number of occasions. I see those all as a little bit the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, and the real issue is to try and fix the issues higher up and make sure that people are in employment if they can be, and that there's high levels of education support. But yes, there's one or two other things.
How targeted will this Food and Schools program be?
You'll really need to wait and see tomorrow, but obviously it would make sense to target to those most in need. But overall, it's not quite as straightforward as saying because a child goes to a high decile school, it's not possible for them to be going to school hungry, because there are even very high decile 9 and 10 schools that have feeder areas which are of lower income, and that could be causing issues, or a child could just be not getting fed even though they're coming from a higher income home.
So will it be universal, the program?
Need to wait and see tomorrow.
Didn't you take issue with
Well, there are a number of things there. So you'll see tomorrow, costs are substantially greater in Honiara Wearsville. The state fully pays, and it's a breakfast, lunch, I think it might be a dinners type model. There's no engagement with the private sector or the community. And I mean, in the end, the programs that we've seen that have run best have had a combination of all different factors.
So I'll speak here when you said there were one or two other things, so it won't be just food.
Yeah, I wouldn't overhype it, but it's not just food, no.
It's not a fully governmentally funded program. How are you going to ensure regulatory oversight to make sure that nutrition is adequate?
Yeah, so the government already contracts with partners in a number of different areas, and there are obviously demands and requirements on them. I think when you see tomorrow the program, you'll feel confident that the nutrition benefits are there.
So will there be compulsory standards across schools?
Well, it'll be a uniform program in so much that it's rolled out that way, and I'm sure the nutritional benefits will be high. I mean, it's no different from the government saying that we currently run a program of fruit in schools, for which last year we gave away 18 million pieces of fruit in a fairly extensive program, and some would have higher nutritional benefits than others.
But you wouldn't go along presumably with Coke in schools?
No, we're not planning to roll out Coke in schools, as much as that might be a disappointment to some school children who are watching this.
Some Whangarei schools are complaining that they're seeing increasingly violent new entrants coming to school, and that they're not getting the resources they need to deal with them. But are the resources there?
I don't have any details on the. There's a particular pickup in violent activity in Whangarei. Again, we have been rolling out more and different resources across schools. So you've seen us in, I think, decile 3 schools, we extended social workers in schools, for instance, as programs, other things. So, I mean, look, as a general rule, there can be a variety of different reasons, but it's difficult for me to comment without the data.
The argument's been, I think, that some of these children need teacher aids with them all the time, but funding for that's been
I see what you mean.
And put into professional development for teachers.
I'd have to go and check for you, but my understanding was that the funding for in that area had been increasing, not nearly at the rate that people would necessarily want, but I don't think there's been any reduction. So if there's a change in behaviour, I don't think it's directly related to anything the government's specifically doing. But I mean, it's one of the arguments around, you know, there's a coherent argument to say, well, the government could pay for everything, would say, for instance, when it comes to food in schools. And the argument is, of course, there's lots of demands on the government's resources, and it's also quite a high-cost provider. And that's one of the issues. And if we're responsible for all of the administration and distribution, then we're actually an expensive way of doing that. And if there's companies and individuals that want to play that part, then that might be a lot more efficient for everybody.
Perhaps we could just
roughly how much money is being saved by not having fully governmentally funded?
We'll see that tomorrow.
When is the government settling on its final position on the RMA post the discussion document process?
I don't know the exact date of that. I mean, we're working our way through that.
So is it not imminent?
Well, I don't have any exact details of the morning, this one, please.
Tony Alexander speculated today that perhaps the Chinese meat block was linked to the Dalai Lama coming to New Zealand. Do you?
Oh, the Chinese meat block?
Yeah.
No.
No, it wasn't?
No.
What do you think? I mean, was China's response proportionate to what was presumably an administrative thing? And the MPI said they went to the World Trade Organization, which I gather is how you went to.
Well, there's a million ways you can analyse the thing, but in the end, there was a failure on the MPI side to get absolute sign-off on the new documentation. It's not a lot more complex than that, but it's certainly got nothing to do with Dalai Lama.
And so China's response was proportionate?
Well, in the end, we accept fully that they are have the sole right for determining the paperwork that comes that supports goods like meat that come across their borders. So in the end, we accept that, and we accept that the fault was largely on the outside.
Was it wise to give to assign food safety the portfolio to such a rookie minister, considering how important it is along with biosecurity?
Well, it's not food safety. It's what's the issue is, as I understand it, the transfer from food safety to MPI changed the documentation. There was discussions on the Chinese side, but it wasn't fully signed off by the Chinese, and so when the change occurred, they, in the strictest sense, didn't recognise the paperwork.
But would a more experienced minister have sort of better antenna about what's going on? That's
no,
still their authority.
I don't think that's right. I think this is something that took place in March, so it's taking place some time ago.
So do you still stand by the assertion that you can get 85% to 90% New Zealand ownership of Meridian and the endings?
Yes, but then obviously the numbers get bigger, in terms of it's a bigger float. So the government's expecting to get in the order of $3 odd billion for its share. So it would, I'm sure, always reserve the right to do that float in chunks if it wanted to.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it wouldn't have to float 49% in one day, would it? I mean, it might choose to do that if that's what the demand looks like and that's what the interest is, but it could always do that in two slices, for instance, if it wanted to.
Is that something you're seriously considering?
Well, I'm just saying we'd always reserve the right to do that, because if you work your way back through the maths of getting 85%, by definition what it means is retail has to take up about a third. And so, if there are digestion issues, in theory that's a possibility.
So that's an option on the table at the moment?
Sure.
Digestion issues to mean demand?
Well, it's quite a lot for retail, but it's not impossible, and it's a very, I can't go too much into the company, but it's arguably going to be either the largest or second largest stock on the exchange. So, if you look in Australia, when they did the float of Telstra, the Australian government did that in blocks. So it's a possibility. It's also definitely possible to be done in one block of 49%, but the government will definitely reserve the right to have it in blocks.
Are you leaning towards that at the moment?
No, I wouldn't say at this stage, but we've made a firm view on that, but certainly we'll make sure we take advice. But I'm certain we'll give ourselves the option of doing
that. And are you considering that because you need to, or you want to get that 85%?
Well, we have to hit the 85%. I mean, we've given New Zealanders a strong commitment, we tend to honour that.
Do you expect the amount of money involved here, like 1.7 billion, might even be 3.25 billion?
Yep.
And Meridian, that money, a lot much of that money's going to come out, would be in banks, in bank.
Yeah, but I think the bank deposit rate, we can get you the number, but my understanding is that it's hundreds of billions, isn't it? It's a lot of money anyway.
Okay, but do you expect this to have an effect on basically New Zealand's overseas accounts in terms of that money? Banks would have to replace some of that cash by borrowing more overseas.
At the real margin, you can make that argument, but I think it's very minor. But, there's lots of potential scenarios. Like, for instance, it's possible that the money was would have been invested offshore, or it might have been invested somewhere else on some other asset class. So I don't think it's quite as straightforward as that.
Is the government negotiating with China about direct compatibility with renminbi?
Yes. As I said, when we were in China, that's something we'd like to do. And my understanding is that the officials on both sides are working on that, and we're looking for as fast outcome as we can get.
Any time frames?
I haven't had any advice since I've been back, but I know they're working on it.
Are there any issues for New Zealand or for China in doing that?
More opportunities than issues, I think. I mean, it's a well-trodden path in one sense that our Australian friends have agreed that process. The indications I got on from the Chinese side was that it was definitely possible for us to do it quite quickly because they've agreed that with Australia and they'd like to agree with New Zealand.
On the legal aid bank, judgment on Friday, did Justice Mitchell give you a meeting to find successful
appeal
to the Supreme Court?
Well, I appreciate I can't, you know, obviously, second to you, you know, sense of peer views, all I can say is that you know, we wouldn't appeal to the Supreme Court unless we were serious about doing so.
It could be hugely problematic though if you lose the appeal.
Well, let's cross that bridge if we come to it. Okay, on that happy note, I'll leave for the other bridge.